Oh, hey.
Hello, Governor. It has been far too long since I've been able to say that.
You haven't been saying it in my absence?
Yeah. I actually I've been the official British guy when you couldn't be on, so it's nice to have you back.
Funny, cool.
Hello and welcome to the Cult Cast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. It's going to be a very special episode. I'm here with my friends and true Apple geniuses. Alex Eve is back with us.
Don't throw that out there.
Welcome back to the show, Alex.
Hey.
And that was a very excited hey. And the gubbiest gub of them all, here to gub it up all show long. Mr. Leander Caney is finally back from his extraordinarily long vacation. How long were you gone, Leander?
I hate to admit it, but more than 12 weeks.
No.
That's right, 11 weeks. 11 weeks. At the end of this week, it's going to be 11 weeks.
That's not a vacation. That's a sabbatical.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
And what people should probably also know is that you're on vacation right now.
I'm vacation inverted commas. I'm actually working, and I've been working the whole time that I've been away. That's one of the benefits of, being able to, of an enterprise like this is that you can work from anywhere.
Enterprise, good word. And was working, that's in quotes, right?
No, I did a bunch of work.
Did you?
Yeah. But some of it was on the beach, I got to admit, but I was working.
Well, I want to hear a little bit about your trip, but in honor of you being back, I figured that you probably would be a little homesick, because I know part of the time you were in jolly old England, right, visiting your friends and family, and I wanted to play a little something for you that might make you feel a little bit at home.
Oh, yeah? The Sex Pistols?
Is that making you feel good?
No, I hate that song.
What do you mean? It's about the Queen.
I hate the Queen.
You hate Queen?
That's not very nice at all.
We went on about this once before. Yeah, no, I'm an anti-monarchist.
I think the Sex Pistols would have been more appropriate then.
Exactly. God save the Sex Pistols is much better.
God kill the Queen.
They played it at the opening ceremony of the Olympics, but NBC, being complete chuckleheads, cut it off as ass.
Oh, really?
Did he just say chucklehead?
Yeah, I think he did.
Wow. That's incredible. So, Leander, you were there for opening, not closing, but opening?
No, I watched it on television. I was actually in Spain during the Olympics. I was there a week before in London.
Gotcha. Oh, you were. Okay.
We left before it started, yeah.
So you weren't even in London all that long.
We were there. We were actually in England for about two and a half weeks. But we spent a week in my where I grew up in Shropshire, rural Shropshire.
So you're in some rural Shropshire. English town.
Yeah, we were in. We were staying in Wellington, and we went to Bridge North and Shrewsbury and all these other little rural towns.
Wow, Shropshire. That's. This is really random, but that's a location in The Importance of Being Earnest.
Huh.
Which is a play that I love. Sorry, keep going.
Yeah. It's got quite a bit of history there. Tolkien based the Shires.
Yeah. Shropshire. Really? Is that what it looks like too?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, not like movies. That looks New Zealand.
Except there's coal plants everywhere.
Have you seen the Ant? I mean, he's a hobbit.
That's true.
Yeah, well, the journey was they took in the hobbit was from Shropshire, which is very rural, into Birmingham, which was represented Mordor. Birmingham was, because it was the birth of the Industrial Revolution, the city was completely black with soot and, heavily industrialized, and Tolkien hated it, and so that's what he based Mordor on.
Wow. That's actually pretty interesting. I'm a big Lord of the Rings fan, in case you guys didn't know.
Hey,
before we move on, I just realized I forgot to say two things. A, my name is Arifin Elijah. I'll be your host for people who are listening for the first time. And we do have a sponsor. This week's sponsor is Mite Tees, the best place on the internet to get your Apple-inspired t-shirts. And Mite Tees has done some t-shirts for Cult of Mac that have been cool and some have been controversial.
So some definitely got some emails, but we could talk about that later in the show. I want to start with kind of a minor story that you may not have heard of, and that was Steve Jobs' home was broken into this week, and I'm sure you guys both heard about this.
Right. Yeah.
So some bum broke into Steve Jobs' house, and when I say bum, I do mean bum. This is just so strange. I mean, so they caught some 35-year-old homeless guy in his house, or I guess after the fact, right?
Yeah.
And he had broken.
That's funny how they caught him. Yeah.
Wait. So did they catch him as he was leaving, or did they realize the house had been robbed and then they went looking for the guy?
Well, the house had been robbed, and he stole a bunch of jewelry and some computers. And it was when he plugged the computers in.
Oh, right. And they called in for a software update.
Yeah. And then Apple Security is like, you know, find my Mac or whatever. Jobs@mac.com. Wherever he's staying.
That is so funny. So the ghost of Steve Jobs came back to haunt this guy when his computers phoned home for their updates. See, this guy is obviously not a sophisticated thief, because as everyone knows, if you steal an Apple computer, the very first thing you do is pull the hard drive, right?
Well, I've not stolen any, but
I've stolen a ton and I've never gotten caught. And that's the way to do it. You got to pull the hard drive.
All right.
Because if you don't pull the hard drive, then the first thing it does is it can connect to Find My Mac, of course. Of course, I don't even think that's what happened on those machines. I think it was just a software update. And that's how they located the machines. But of course, this guy stole a bunch of other stuff besides iMacs. He stole some iPads. He stole a SodaStream soda maker. It looks like the guy stole about 60 grand worth of jewelry. But the thing that I was like really happy to see that they recovered, he stole Steve Jobs' wallet with his driver's license and his credit cards. And I guess the card had the $1 annual salary that he earns in it.
The wallet, I mean, yeah, it had $1.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's like a symbolic thing, right?
I wonder. Yeah. Maybe he just went and picked up his salary from from Apple just before he died.
And I feel like that kind of thing like belongs in the Smithsonian. I mean, I'm a huge Steve Jobs fan, obviously. You guys know that from listening to the show. But, like, so I was really happy to see that they recovered it. Because out of all things that were recovered, I mean, the jewelry can be replaced. But Steve Jobs' wallet, obviously, I think is kind of priceless.
Yeah. But, the guy didn't even know whose house he'd broken into.
Oh, he didn't.
He was some, you know, obviously had some substance abuse problems, I think. He was a little bit out of it.
Wow. How ironic that he was foiled by a software update.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about some Apple news. Alex, before the show, you and I were talking about the show topics, and you're like, I really want to talk about the Apple TV adding live streaming potentially. So can you tell us a little bit about that story you wrote and why you thought this is exciting?
Well, it was the Wall Street Journal that last night published a little blurb, and I mean, it's August, so stuff is kind of slow, so there wasn't a whole lot to it, but it was pretty interesting, just the idea that Apple's trying to do live television, so deals with cable providers to stream, you know, broadcasts to, I think the journal used the word set-top box, but they had also said that Apple had been working on a standalone TV, you know, like what Leander reported, and that this thing had been prototyped for years. And so it's obviously something Apple's interested in, but whether or not this like live TV aspect is going to come with that or with just an updated Apple TV later on, you know, who knows? But because there's the deals to be made are incredibly complex, obviously. So I just think it's interesting just how Apple will approach Hollywood, and you know, a lot of it sounds like what they did with iTunes and what they did with the iPhone, and so, but without Steve Jobs and without that, you know, his ability to go in and just get those crazy deals, it'll just, I don't know, it'll be interesting.
You know, I think this is really exciting. And when I reread your article, which is called Apple Working with Cable Providers to Stream Live TV to the Living Room, if you want to Google it and read it, I thought this was fascinating because for the last probably 3 weeks, I've actually been watching a lot of live events on my Xbox. And for the first time in my TV watching history, it's been easier to stream live events that are happening in real time, obviously, to my Xbox than it has been to find them on the TV. So I watched the Mars Curiosity rover team, mm-hmm, you know, at NASA celebrating, and they were doing the whole thing live. And I couldn't find anywhere on television that even had that playing.
Right.
And then also yesterday I was watching an event on my Xbox. There's this video game coming out that a lot of us gamers are excited about. It's called Black Ops 2, and it's one of the biggest video games they released on the Xbox. It's going to make like a gazillion dollars. And I was watching all the live footage of them covering it and revealing it and talking about, you know, all the different aspects of the game. And that's not something you would ever see on TV, ever. I mean, there's no one that's going to play that. So for Apple to take this, you know, seriously, I think for me is really exciting because when I was sitting there watching, especially the Curiosity landing, I was like, this is really the future of television, right? I mean, the fact that you're not just watching something playing, like you're going to this event and you're watching it live with all these different people at the same time is really exciting.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's coming of age, the whole universe of streaming content. Like the Summer Olympics is a good example. You know, while NBC was showing you beach volleyball and synchronized swimming and other crap like that that they think is going to appeal to the biggest, you know, the mass audience, the BBC was streaming 24 live streams of video. And so you could pick and choose, you know, from amongst 24 streams. They were covering, how many of the day's events that covered, but that's a lot of choice.
Yeah. NBC, to their credit, was doing that, but they were doing it behind a paywall of sorts where you had to have a cable subscription, so cord cutters couldn't really get in. And even then, I think a lot of people said that the streams were terrible and the app was terrible. But BBC really did it right, and a lot of people in the U.S. during the Olympics were just – they had the NBC fail hashtag on Twitter. And because, I mean, it's just NBC – did a terrible job, even though they were trying to be forward thinking. And I mean, to their credit, it was the most internet savvy Olympics there's ever been, but it still has a long way to go in the US.
Right. But there's, you know, like everyone was saying, there's a lot more content from a lot of different places. And Apple, I think, you know, the latest Apple TV, they sold a couple of million of those. And if they open it up to apps, I think that's going to be the key thing. Then you can get content as apps or content through apps. And that will make a big difference. And they don't even really need to have TV, at least not initially, I don't think. You know, it would be better if they did, of course. But without it, they could still build a pretty compelling living room box that was driven by all kinds of different apps. You know, it would.
And that's what they're right. That's what, you know, that's what they're about, right? Is taking their hardware and software and then piping someone else's content through it and creating a beautiful experience, you know, like with the iPhone and all that stuff. They don't necessarily need to bear the load of being a provider or anything like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about this. I actually don't have an Apple TV yet. I know that's embarrassing to admit since I'm on an Apple podcast.
I gave them one like 2 months ago, 2 or 3 months ago. So
you did? They're so cheap. I should probably just pick up like a few, even though I only have one television. But, you know, they're so cheap. I should just buy several.
And Apple's kept adding stuff. Like they've got Hulu Plus on there now, and they've got all these channels. So they're starting to get into the channel game. It's just going to be a while. All I want is a freaking guy designed by Johnny Ive. You know what I'm talking about? Like a TV guide that they look terrible. I just want a beautiful TV guide.
Oh my gosh, they really do. Yeah, you're right.
Apple made one of those things. Oh my gosh.
Well, that will be the big sell too, right? I mean, I think it's going to be Apple versus Xbox, honestly, because the Xbox experience is really nice, although I don't think the UI is as good as it could be. But yeah, I mean, I know people who have an Apple TV love it, and people like me who use their Xbox to watch this kind of stuff love it too. So I think it's going to be it's going to be Apple v Microsoft yet again coming up in the future. But let's move on to some rumor news, or some rumor control, I should say. I've been getting a lot of people asking me about the Retina Display MacBook Pro, 13-inch size, I should say. And it looks like Mac Rumors was recently tipped off and rewrote about this too, about Geekbench having some computers tested that were 13-inch Retina display models. Did you hear anything about this, Alex?
Yeah, but I mean, it doesn't really mean anything. Like, there were Geekbench stuff months ago. I remember writing about one before the 15-inch came out, like this, and it's been for years. Like, there's been these little and you can fake Geekbench. I mean, Geekbench isn't a...
do you think Apple engineers would really do run Geekbench scores and upload them to Geekbench?
Yeah. That the most secretive company on earth is going to link specs through Geekbench is pretty, yeah. But is it coming? Yeah, probably. This year, no. 2013, probably.
Well, see, yeah, that's the conclusion that I had read was like, oh, well, they might be coming soon. It's like, well, yeah, they might be coming soon. You know, underline might. You know, we might honestly may not see this. Yeah, exactly. Speaking of might.
This is a well-executed
segue. Hey, let me tell you about the company I know. Hey, not yet. So, yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people are jonesing for a Retina display MacBook Pro, the 13-inch model, I should say. And it's coming eventually. We just don't know when, obviously. It'll probably be another year or so. Let's talk about another rumor. This is one that there's been so many rumors around this that to me it seems almost like a certainty at this point. And that's iPhone 5. We're going to see it on September 12th. And the pre-orders are actually going to begin that day, iMore is reporting. So it looks like they're going to be rolling out the iPhones a little bit faster than last year. Because I remember last year they weren't available 4S. For what?
The 4S was 3 days.
Yeah. How many was it? I remember it being like a week or two. How long was it before you could order?
No, 4S was announced on a Wednesday and pre-order started on a Friday. The next step.
Really?
Yeah, it's gotten shorter and shorter with each year, so it's no surprise that it was like a week or 2 weeks for the 4, it was 3 days for the 4S. So, yeah. Hmm.
Well, let me ask you guys this. I've been talking to our Facebook friends, facebook.com/thecultcast, in case you're interested, about what they think. Gazinga. Oh, I messed that up. Bazinga. About the iPhone 5. And if they would be happy if what they got was the prototypes that we've been seeing online, where it's kind of like it's kind of long and slim, the screen's going to be longer, obviously, and they're going to have those two little weird glass plates at the top and the bottom of the back. And I've gotten some mixed reviews. Do you guys like the prototypes that you've been seeing from an industrial design standpoint? Do you think that they look cool? Alex, let's start with you.
You know what? I didn't until I read the best piece next to probably something Cult of Mac has written on the internet by an industrial designer named Don Lehman. Mm-hmm. Lehman, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but just called the Unibody iPhone. You can Google it. He's an industrial designer it doesn't look drastically different. And I didn't expect it to look drastically different, but I wondered what the aluminum would bring to the table, like what that design would bring. And he just went through all of these, you know, the genius that comes with that design. And this thing's going to be, you know, lighter, way more durable. It's going to be all kinds of leaps and bounds greater than the glass kind of thing that we've had. Mm-hmm. So I don't, you know, everybody's saying that. I don't understand when people are complaining about the look of the iPhone 5, which is technically iPhone 6, by the way. Kind of gets on my nerves, but it's technically the iPhone 6.
Yes, technically you're right.
If you're looking up at generations, it's technically the 6th generation.
Technically, I have an iPhone 5S, right?
But anyway, do people want this thing to like have a slide out keyboard? Like, I don't know what the design change.
Well, let me
think about it. How are you going to change such a utilitarian, simple design
people are nuts, aren't they? They say they want a huge screen. They say they want
a huge screen? 4-inch. I mean, it's a big screen. It's like the Samsung.
I guess the point is that it's bigger, but it's long and thin instead of more square. Like, a lot of people...
You want a square for a...
No, I don't. I'm just saying that a lot of people have commented that they want their screen to be a little bit wider than the one they're seeing and not just long and narrow.
Do you know what a wide screen, modern screen looks like? It doesn't look like that. It looks like a rectangle. like, yeah, with the exactly. Yeah. So it'll be so naturally, right? It would be 16:9, which would mean that it would be the, you know, modern widescreen aspect ratio, which means video is going to finally play without that ugly black box.
Yeah, but
the
most
side.
People are used to that ugly black box, right? Because your TV isn't 16:9. I mean, like, it has to have the.
I think people aren't paying attention to the things that really count, which is like long battery life.
Yeah,
of which it should have great battery life, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, good performance and you know, sort of fast networking, and those really are sort of the bottom line. I think people get very seduced by things like large screen sizes. Like when we were in Europe, we saw people walking around with the 5-inch Samsung Galaxy.
The Note. And
the Note. You mean the phablet?
Yeah, yeah, and it's actually kind of intriguing, and it's really cool to look at, and you know, it does look like a very seductive device, but you can't, you know, I held one up to my ear and I felt really ridiculous. It was so massive. And you can't put it in your pocket. I don't know what the battery life is like, but, you know, it can't be any better than the iPhones.
It's funny because I was watching Twit the other day and Leo Laporte was singing the Flablet's praises. He loves that thing. They're about to release another model and he can't wait for the new model. And I was like, he's the first person I have ever heard talk about that phone that doesn't refer to it in some type of joking way.
Well, the users we talked to really liked him. They don't have him a couple of weeks. Well, like one kid we met in London was an art student, and he was doing a lot of drawing on his. And, you know, he had a really good reason to have a big, fat phablet with a stylus. And the stylus for him really made sense because he could draw and sketch on it.
Yeah, it is a lot easier to sketch with a stylus, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, he was really singing his praises. He'd only had it a couple of weeks though, and so he was like still in love with the thing.
Didn't
get a hit of the downside.
That'll wear off.
Yeah.
Well, here's my biggest issue with the phone. That duo tone back that they're building in, so it's going to have like that anodized aluminum look, and then it's going to have. They've always had white or black iPhones, right? And the back is either going to have these little tiny white panels or these little tiny black panels.
You know what that is, right?
This is the argument I always hear. Are you going to say it's because the antennas are under there?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
And I think that's fine. It's a very functional reason.
Hold on. No, the antenna is in the frame, so you. Receivers in the frame, and then you also have nodes in the back. But then you also have your Bluetooth, you have Wi-Fi, you have all that stuff. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now. Go ahead.
Okay. I was going to say, you've got all of the radios that need to be able to transmit. They can't transmit out of metal, so you need to have them under glass, and there's no other way to do it except to have that tiny little sliver on the back, because you can't have it on the front because the front's a screen. So as much as I totally think that Johnny Ive wants that thing to be like the MacBooks, you know, where it's just aluminum smooth, there's no breaks in it. But I mean, you just physically can't right now, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. Okay. So I get that it's functional. I mean, that makes sense. I mean, my iPad has a little plastic piece at the top. I guess I just wish it was on one side or the other, because to have those two panels, one on the top and one on the bottom, I just think that's butt ugly. And I'm sure once it's out and I hold it and I cradle it like a newborn babe, I'll probably love it. I probably will love it. Let's be honest. I mean, it's going to look really great, and it's going to make my iPhone S feel like a caveman tool. Right?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I'm basically just going to throw it in the garbage. I'm not even going to recycle it.
It's great for licking. You get two different kinds of textures on your tongue when you're licking the thing.
Yeah, this 4S is going to, this groundbreaking 4S that you love right now, you're going to hate next month.
I know. And you know, the thing is, I don't even qualify for an upgrade. I'm just going to buy it anyway.
Yeah, you're right. You know, like I like the 4S design. The glass sandwich. It's really, really durable. You know, like I've really not looked at my phone. I've dropped mine. I don't keep it in a case, and I've dropped it loads of times. It's got a couple of chips on the corners, but it hasn't shattered. It hasn't scratched. It's stood up to abuse really well. It's amazing, in fact.
It is. It is amazing, the fact that it's glass, because I've dropped mine several times too, and it keeps on, you know, keeps on going.
Yeah, you all go naked too. You go commando with your iPhones.
Oh yeah,
don't
my
you?
iPhones are totally commando.
You're a purist.
Yeah.
Actually, I feel like it has scratched. It's got a few scratches on it, but nothing that's really, really devastating.
Yeah, mine too.
Only the most elite Apple fans go naked.
Yeah, hey, I figured if I don't protect my privates with any undergarments, why do it with my iPhone? Is that TMI? Sorry, guys.
Boxes of briefs.
That's why this is like an audio podcast.
That's why, thank God it is.
Although, you know, I guess we could always do video. I mean, I'm pretty sure Leo doesn't wear pants, but you can never tell.
You can tell. That's why he's always smiling.
Yeah, exactly. Why do you think he's always in such a good mood? Well, hey, before we move on, we've got a couple things we're going to wrap up with. You know, I want to talk about your favorite browsers. This is something else I've talked to our Facebook friends about, and it was actually really popular. People had a lot of different opinions on which browser was best. And then we're going to do faves and raves. Our favorite gear is going to get pitched, and we're going to vote on that. But let me talk about our sponsor real fast, which is Mike Tees. Mike Tees makes the best Apple tees on the internet. The best Apple-inspired tees, the best Steve Jobs-inspired tees. And I don't know if you saw the Mac Classic MILF tee that Mike Tees did for Cult of Mac that received ample distasteful emails. It stood for Mac I'd Like to Friend, by the way. Mm-hmm. But that tee did
sell out. Which is just a weird acronym in and of itself.
It is.
I mean, Mike Tees was reaching for that. I mean, come on.
I thought it was hilarious. It was based upon a Sylph. There was a sandwich I'd like to friend. I guess that made kind of more sense, right? Because you go, you know.
Maybe so. But, Leander, you remember that picture of that fan that we saw who sent us him wearing that T-shirt?
A nightclub, yeah.
In a nightclub?
Right, with surrounded by strippers?
He was surrounded by some questionable ladies of the night.
Yeah, and he's just like, dude, this shit's
He had a
best.
Big smile on his face, yeah.
It's like, rock on, check us out. Yeah.
Well, if you're interested in Apple-inspired tees, head over to mighttees.com. It's mighttees.com. There's a bunch of other Mac-inspired tees, Steve Jobs-inspired tees, and I actually think that they have some Cult of Mac tees left. Check them out, mighttees.com. And if you're interested in ordering, you can save 15% off your order with the discount code CULTCAST15. And Mike Tees ships anywhere in the world. In fact, a lot of the orders go international, so I want to thank them for sponsoring the show. Let's talk about browsers. Okay, so we're back. Sorry about that. Little internet connection problem. So, Leander, I was asking you which browser is your favorite. My guess is Safari. Because
wrong.
That's what
completely
comes
wrong.
What is it, Firefox? Gotcha.
Oh, my God. No, that's a bloated pig.
So Chrome. You're using Opera then.
Chrome. Chrome's
okay,
the best.
So this is a very personal choice. Tell me why you like Chrome so much.
I like the tabs. It's for stupid reasons. One, because the tab bar is much thinner than it is in Safari. Safari wastes a lot of space at the top.
Interesting. Okay.
And for some reason, it annoys me.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally irrational and stupid, but it does. And I know people are going to say, yeah, you can go do full screen browsing in Safari,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, I don't know. I just never really got into that. But anyway,
I don't really use that feature either.
Yeah, some people. I was looking at that Facebook thread, and there were some people in there who were raving about that. And I don't know why. You know, what do you need that extra inch or so of space for? But then again, I guess you know why am I worrying about the big fat tab bar? you know, the good thing is that it's pretty well integrated to the OS, so it's easy to keep your bookmarks synced. You know, with iCloud and have them show up on your iOS device, and that's just really totally useful. And I do use that on the iPhone and the iPad for those reasons, you know, because I've got bookmarks synced and it has little bookmarklets and stuff like that, which is easy. And I hate having to reset all that up again if I get a new device or
if you log Chrome with your Gmail account, that all works with Chrome too.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. The main reason I like Chrome though is because you can open up a bajillion tabs. And it doesn't bog down the same way that Safari does. Like, Safari will bring your system to its knees eventually.
Hmm.
It seems to have more memory leaks than Chrome does. Chrome seems to be more, you know, handle multiple tabs better.
Well, I want to come back to that memory leak problem because I've definitely experienced that too. But first, Alex, what's your browser of choice?
You know what? I go back and forth over the years. I've gone back and forth. I remember I was a diehard Chrome user. Probably a year and a half ago, used it nonstop for like months. And for the past like a year, I've been safari all the way. And especially in Mountain Lion, I've just it's really slick. They got the Chrome. One of my biggest things was that Chrome had the unified search bar. And they've got that now in Safari on Mountain Lion. And I love Safari's reader feature where you can click read the reader over at the right. And then it kind of turns it into this Instapaper, like really stripped down, clean version of the article.
I hope you don't do that on Cult of Mac.
No, I use Adblocker. And then I don't mind the way Safari handles tabs, and I like the Chrome. Isn't that funny? The chromatic look in Safari, but I like them. You know, no colors, kind of just simple. Chrome just—I don't know. I do agree with Leander about the memory leaks. I just actually today had to reboot my computer because Safari. I think this is a Mountain Lion issue. I don't know, but Safari ate into my CPU, and it was like fans were going nonstop, and you could actually hear the fans, which is a big deal for the new Retina MacBook Pro. You're not supposed to be able to hear them, but you could hear the fans because it was getting so bogged down. So I had to restart it. But I think Chrome is better for low memory machines. Like if you don't have a ton of RAM and a nice processor, I think Chrome handles better. But I haven't run into too many problems, and I like the sync. Like what Leander said, that it syncs fine across all my devices.
Well, interesting. I'm almost reversed to you, Alex, because I was a diehard Safari user for a long time, and I never understood why people would use another browser. And eventually, I switched to Chrome because the Safari memory leak was so bad. I use a little application called iStat Menus, which gives you an insight into all these different things that your computer is doing. And one of the things is it shows you memory usage. And Safari, throughout the course of the day, would tie up a gig of RAM. And the only way to make it release that memory would be to close it and reopen it. And finally, I just got fed up because I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, I have been using this browser for a year, and Apple still hadn't fixed it. So I switched to Chrome begrudgingly because I think Chrome is kind of an ugly browser, personally. I like the monochrome experience that Safari provides. And I actually really love Chrome a lot. I mean, at first, I really hated that unified search / web address bar. I didn't like it at all. I really preferred to have my search and my web bar be two different bars. That's grown on me a lot. Yeah, I really hated it when I first started using it.
That makes no sense.
I don't know. I wanted to do a search. Like you could type in a search in that bar, and it would bring up a list of results, but your search still stayed in that bar. So if you needed to change it, you could do that. But most of it was just visual preference, I think, because now I actually really love the unified experience. And being able to sync your bookmarks via Chrome over all your devices, if they're using Chrome, is really nice. I mean, when I did a fresh install of Mountain Lion recently, I was able to just sync all my bookmarks instantly, and I was back up right exactly where I was before the reinstall, which was great. But now I'm hearing a lot from people who are using the new Safari that Safari's faster. And the iOS features are obviously going to be a big thing. I want to read a couple comments that we got from our Facebook page. One of the ones that I thought was really interesting was David Burris from our Facebook page said he loves Safari because the integration with iOS devices, which is obviously a big one. It's going to be even more big when we get iOS 6, right? Because now we're going to have like tabs in the cloud, that type of thing. There's obviously reader integration, iCloud tabs. He mentioned that again. There's going to be the share buttons, which I didn't even think about. That's a really good feature. There's a new tab view. I'm not exactly sure what he means by that. Is that just the tabs expanding when you guys open them? Do you know?
I think it's like cover flow for all the tabs you have open.
Oh, okay.
I think.
Okay. And then he says,
say it again. What's the name?
He said the new tab view. He really likes that about the new Safari.
Oh, in Mountain Lion, you can like pinch out or something. I forget the gesture, but it's like a album art type cover flow experience for tabs.
Gotcha.
In the browser, yeah.
He also mentions he likes the full screen mode, which I'm like you, Leander. I actually don't really use it all that often. But
full screen mode in Chrome.
What's that?
full screen mode's in Chrome too.
Oh, is it really? I never actually use it in Chrome.
Chrome just got, sorry.
No problem. Liam Jaffrey says Safari because it's so fast in Mountain Lion. Somebody said that they use it just because Apple gave it to them and they use whatever Apple gives them, which is exactly what I thought you were going to say, Leander. I don't know why.
I'm quite lazy. I do use a lot of the built-in apps, you know, just because they're the default and it's the easiest thing to go with, and I'm too ignorant to go out and search out something else, you know. But when it comes to browsers and stuff, I try out new browsers. I've always like been a bit of a browser, you know, by browser curious. And to tell the truth, though, I actually run them both at the same time. So I've got a bunch of tabs open in Safari, and I got a bunch of tabs open in Chrome.
Mm. Really? Yeah, I'll open something in another. Like, I'll if something won't work in Safari, I'll go over to Chrome. Like, if something won't load or
Could you repeat that statement? Would you mind repeating that statement? You're getting a little digital on us. You're starting to sound like the Terminator on low battery.
Oh, I gotcha. No, I just said that. Dang it! What did I say?
Something brilliant, I'm sure.
I remember. So I'll open something in Chrome if it's not loading right in Safari. Like that's why I always keep a secondary browser just if something doesn't work.
Can I just say for all those listening, if you guys had any idea how many technical problems we've had today, it's a miracle this show's even happening. And it's just like never ending. I think the big thing about Safari that is going to make me kind of try it again is once we get iOS 6 and we start getting even more iOS integration with the Safari on your Mac, I think that's going to be the big thing. Even though Safari, I think, still has the memory leak as far as I know. And I was actually going to say also, I love that Chrome has extensions, but I guess Safari has extensions now too. I've never actually used any Safari extensions. Have you guys used any of them?
Yeah. 1Password.
Ad blocker.
Okay. You use ad blocker?
What?
Yeah. Funny story about that. Yesterday, I had ad blocker installed on Chrome for, I guess, like 6-7 months. And for the longest time, I've actually even brought this up with you, Leander. I was like, I'm not seeing certain things in Cultomatic. Like certain boxes aren't updating. And I realized that I had the ad blocker thing turned on and I just didn't even know. So I turned it off. And now I'm experiencing the site in its full glory.
Public service, absolutely.
And it's the best way to see it too. We should do what Ars Technica does, which is like block people who are running ad blocker.
Oh, really? Can you do that?
Yeah, because they're getting a free ride. Unfortunately, we have to, you know, we have to get some revenue from somewhere. And if people want to read the content, that's the price of admission.
Right. Yeah. It's like you got to pay somehow. It's like either we got to do ads or we got to pay for the content.
Well, they had such a huge block of their audience was using our blocker that it was, you know, it was a big chunk, like a quarter or a third or more. And, you know, that they're eating up a ton of bandwidth. I mean, it costs them thousands of dollars to run that site every month. And if they're not monetizing those eyeballs, then they were seriously in danger of running at a loss.
You heard it here first, people. We need to monetize your eyeballs.
Public service announcement.
Well, it's a good point. You know, actually, I was talking about AdBlocker with a friend of mine, and I was like, does anyone actually use AdBlocker? It's probably such a small set of the actual internet-using audience. But I think your point's really good, Leander, in that most of the people who read Cultomatic, Ars Technica, probably more Ars Technica, are very internet-savvy, you know, very technical in nature.
Are you insulting our audience?
No. I think our audience are more the creatives and not the nerds. That's just personal opinion. Hey, but what's that?
The rebels, the misfits.
Exactly.
The square pegs of the round holes.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, for their audience, especially like if all of them are using it, it's like, yeah, they don't have any way to pay their brilliant writers like Chris Forrest Mac Daddy.
Right. Absolutely.
My friend and your friend.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, hey, so I mean, I guess what it comes down to is just depends on what you like more. I you know, Chrome has always felt a little snappier to me, but I guess the new Safari is equally as fast, some people are saying. So if you're going for the iOS integration, I mean, obviously Safari is the way to go. I think I'm going to give Safari another try because I've been using Chrome for about a year now, and I think it's time to try something else out where I can just do what Leander does and just have all the browsers open.
All right.
Well, hey, guys, let's wrap up with one of my favorite segments. It's called Faves and Raves and Faves. Did you like that singing?
Boom, boom.
It was all right.
Yeah, it was good. That was like a 5 out of 10, I think. And this is, of course, the segment where we pitch our favorite apps or technology to each other, and then we vote on which one's best. Leander, since it's your cult cast re-debuting, I'm going to give you the tie-breaking votes.
Okay.
Since there's three of us, we may tie, and I always hate when that happens. And Buster's not here, so one of us actually has a chance of winning this time. But you know what we learned, Leander? I think last time we did Faves and Raves... Mm-hmm. Is I always ask Buster if he wants to go first because I'm trying to be a nice guy, and he always says no. And I thought maybe it's because he was unprepared, but what we discovered is it's a strategy that he uses. He waits to hear what everyone is talking about, and then he tries to pick something that's better.
I see. Okay. Yeah. So he's got two or three choices, and
exactly,
he holds those in reserve.
Exactly. Yeah, so he has a dynamic choice, which is totally bull. And next time I see him, I'm going to punch him right in his beard.
Yeah, cheetah.
which is a lot shorter now, so it might actually hurt his face. But Alex, why don't you start? Because I don't believe that you've ever started before.
I did last week, but whatever.
Really? Did you?
Probably. I don't care. It's fine. Have we picked Dark Sky before?
I don't believe so.
Okay, I was just making sure. I thought maybe Buster did, but yeah, this is an iPhone app, an iPad app. It's a weather app, and I know we've picked weather apps before, but this app is cooler than the rest because it will literally send you a push notification minutes before it's about to rain.
Wow, that's kinda cool. So
for somebody like you, Irfan, who lives in not so sunny Seattle. Where rain is frequent.
Yeah, the other thing is it's going to be crazy on your phone.
Yeah, that sounds annoying. Every 10 seconds, I'm getting a reminder.
No, this app is really slick, and it's a universal download. I think it's a couple bucks, maybe $1, and it's got radar built in. It just displays everything really nice. Really pretty. You can see all your forecasts up front, and then you can tap. It's got the prettiest radar type interface that I've seen. Usually apps are really radar focused or they're not, and this kind of mixes both in a really nice way. So it's good for like people that want a little more power, want to be able to see what's coming, and then it's also good for people who just want to know what it is right now. And then the push notification obviously is really neat. So if you live in a rainy area, then it will save your butt. Or at least save you having to take an umbrella.
I dress in rain gear pretty much 24/7. So that will be helpful when I'm at the beach in my rain gear and I'm like, oh good, I need to put my hood up.
Yeah, right.
Okay, Leander, your turn. What do you got?
All right. So when I was traveling, I was using the Google Maps app a lot, especially trying to find my way around cities like Paris. You know, just when you needed it, there was no internet connection, so the tiles wouldn't update. I'd be totally lost. Then I came across something that apparently isn't new, but it's completely new to me, which is offline maps you can load. When you don't have an internet connection.
Yes, very important when you're traveling.
Well, actually, I have the turn by turn ones, the TomTom one. And I never really liked it. I don't know why. I just couldn't get into it. It was too GPS car centric. You know, it was like the one you get in your car with the turn by turn directions. I didn't really like them for finding a way around on foot or bicycle or public transport. Anyway, cut a long story short. There's a map that I've been using called Off Maps 2.
Mm-hmm.
Off Maps 2, and it's fairly cheap. I think it's $2.99 in the App Store. But of course, they charge you for different city maps. So each map costs $1, and you know, I had to get a map for Barcelona and a map for Paris and a map for London. You get two free maps when you buy the app, but then you buy maps as you need them, and they're based upon open street map data. So the data they use is actually free, but they've done a really nice job with layering in all the different things you might be interested in, like restaurants, fast food places, subway stops, public transportation, and you can turn these on and off as needed.
So the OpenStreetMap data wasn't shaky for you?
Shaky?
Like, I don't know. I've heard that OpenStreetMap, just because it's open source, it's crowdsourced, that it can be a little spotty.
You know, to be honest, I was just using it for point-to-point directions, and I used it a couple of times to find a restaurant or a bar where the kid needs to go to the bathroom or something like that. And it was perfectly fine for those uses. I hadn't heard that. I hadn't heard that people were complaining about its reliability or its completeness.
It's just like with anything that's open sourced and crowd controlled.
It seemed pretty complete. You know, like I was really amazed. Of course, I was in cities that big popular cities, but they seem to have a ton of data. They seem to have a ton of things, ton of points of interest, and all the museums and all the landmarks, everything you might need.
All right, well, I'm pulling a Buster here on you, Leander. Because I was going to choose a piece of gear, and I'll probably talk about this on a future show. It's something that I'm reviewing. But I actually have an app that's very similar to yours that I'm going to go with. It's called City Maps to Go. And I think the app costs $1. It works on iPad and iPhone. And all its maps are free. You can download them for any city in the world, practically. They're always coming out with new maps. It has lots of points of interest as well. And the cool thing is all the maps are in vector. So that means they're infinitely scalable. You can scroll down to like the most small level of the map, and it looks really crisp, really sharp. And I used this app on a trip a couple years ago, so it's not a new app, but it's great because I think what a lot of people don't realize is that your GPS on your iDevice works regardless of whether you have data turned on. So you can still find yourself with your little pinpoint thing on your map no matter where you are, as long as you have cell phone coverage or even Wi-Fi.
GPS,
yeah. Thank you. Well, it's not really GPS if you're on Wi-Fi, right?
Tower triangulation, and some apps use both, but GPS is some, you know, like Dark Sky, a lot of weather apps will drain your battery because they use GPS and cell towers, but Dark Sky just uses cell towers. So it depends on the app, but.
Oh, interesting. So anyway, City Maps to Go, it's really cheap. The maps are great. And if you're traveling, it is one of those must have apps because it'll help you find your way everywhere. And unlike Leander's app, you don't have to pay for the maps.
No.
So, all right. I'm going to vote for, let's see, I can't vote for mine, and mine was obviously the best. So I'm going to go with Alex, your Dark Sky app.
You're just trying to screw me over. What the hell, Irfan?
Hey, welcome back. Alex, what do you think?
I'm going to vote for yours,
yeah!
because it's vector based, I think that's good.
Of course, Leander's maps might be vector based too. He just might not know.
I think it is vector based.
Yeah,
it scrolls in pretty nicely.
Well, Leander, you lose. I'm sorry.
Come on, that's totally rubbish.
But whose do you think is better?
Weather maps, I couldn't think of anything more boring except maybe maps.
Exactly.
And you know, come like on, you know how I know when it's gonna rain?
You look out the sky?
Look out the window, yeah.
Well, you live in San Francisco. It never rains.
Hey, I used to come from London, so I know.
Well, then
I
don't need the map because it's always raining. You need the opposite of Alex's app. You need it to tell you when the sun's about to come out.
Yeah, that's kind of true. You're right. But I tried a few weather maps because I like go cycling and it is pretty unpredictable in San Francisco in the fall, and you do want to know when it's raining. But I'll go with that. Just for that reason, I'm going to go with Alex.
Woo! Man. All right. Well, I win anyway. I never win anyway because Buster's always here strategizing. I thought this was just a friendly game, and he's getting all serious about it. Well, hey, that's all the time we have for today. Before we wrap up, I almost forgot to mention our sponsor last show was Pimp Your Screen. I referred to them as Pimp My Screen, because that's what I had been doing since I've been using the app, pimping my screen all day long, because it makes it so easy to update your wallpapers, and they have all sorts of great backgrounds for your iPhone and iPad. So check them out in the App Store. It's only 99 cents right now. It's on sale. It's Pimp Your Screen. Leander, loved having you back on.
Thank you. Have fun.
And I'm sure we'll have you on.
Let's be back. Yeah.
Yeah, again in the future, and you'll always be on vacation somewhere. Whether it's just a vacation of the mind or actually somewhere sunny.
Right.
That's it. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. Hey, check us out on Facebook. It's Facebook.com/TheCultCast. And of course, the conversation continues on Twitter. Leander never tweets, but he's Al Caney, not Al Caney. On Twitter, although I'm sure there is an Al Caney. He's probably very interested.
Much more interested than my stream.
I'm at Erfon, that's E-R-F-O-N. Alex is Alex E. Heath. And of course, for all the best news, reviews, and how-tos, check out Cult of Mac on Twitter. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. Thanks for listening. We will see you guys next time.
Boom.
Boom.